You know, guys, when you get to be our age, finding the motivation to get back in shape can be hard. It's just plain tough to find a routine and to stick with it. Good news. FitBod is a fitness app that is anything but routine. It tailors your workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule, so you can avoid burnout. And FitBod helps keep up your momentum by mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. Best yet, FitBod has over 1,000 demonstration videos, so you can learn the right way to do each exercise. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription or try the app for free at fitbod.me/zabe. That's fitbod.me/zabe. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, goodbye Kate Smith, the latest casualty in the never-ending search for fake social justice purity. Andy Pollin, our Tuesday guest, and he's got thoughts on the NFL draft. And Kyler Murray, and can he be trusted to stick to football? All of that, plus don't laugh, Ukraine. He's really your president. Bonus 1% Zabe is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. Thank you for downloading, and thank you for subscribing. Andy Pollin picked up the phone during intermission periods of the Capitals' 5-2 loss in Game 6 on Monday night to the Carolina Hurricanes. So you'll hear some of that talk interspersed in our conversation. But otherwise, let me skip to the key part of that game for Caps fans listening, and just say the wave-off of the goal by Ovechkin that would have tied the game at 3-3 was the right call. It was the right call. Ovi couldn't see the puck. He's lying if he says he did. And he caught pad first, and then he slammed into Mrazek with his skate and knocked him and the puck backwards and into the net. That gets disallowed. 9 times out of 10, if not 10 out of 10. Especially on replay. The replay showed it. I'm all for bitching at truly bad calls to a certain extent. But don't bitch about calls that are actually the right call. That is one of the most unflattering things you can do as a sports fan, I think, anywhere. Stop bitching about correct calls and focus on, you know, we kind of played like shit tonight. Anyway, that's later on in the show. You'll hear Andy and I reacting to the game in real time, and I apologize, but that was the only time I could get Andy in between periods. The guy's such a hockey fanatic now. I say, can I record you during the game? No, I got to watch my Caps. Okay, Andy didn't say that, but I'm exaggerating. Before we get to Andy, Kate Smith has become the latest casualty in the search for social justice purity. And it is only pure in one regard, this whole episode. It's pure insanity. But then again, we are living in insane times. So perhaps it makes perfect and total sense. Even though I hate it, it disgusts me, and it's very unhealthy for the republic as a whole, for our democracy, for our society. This accomplishes nothing. It just gets all of us further at each other's throats, and it gets people calling for other people to lose their jobs. Will Cain, whose job it is to debate issues on ESPN and First Take, took the stance of, hey man, this happened in the 30s. Kind of a different day and age back then. And besides, Kate Smith is dead. And besides, there's no other record of her in her commentary, her actions, or her writings, or in her dealings with people to indicate she was racist at all. But now that doesn't matter. The songs are racist. She sung them and she's got to go. So Will Cain is now under attack by some. He should be fired. Let's lop everybody's heads off. Wait, don't use that phrase. I'm not going to get into that controversy either. You know, the funny thing is, you look back and you say, all right, here is a Presidential Medal of Freedom winner. Here is a woman who helped raise more than, what, $600 million in war bonds with her voice alone during World War II to fight Nazis and win World War II? And you're going to take her statue down over two songs? How long have those songs been hiding? Or was it just that nobody really cared? Did it take one letter to the editor? Did it take one email from one person to the New York Yankees? I think I've read a little bit, and I haven't done a ton of research on this, but I think I read it was one person. One person said, hey, what about this? And the Yankees are like, ooh, yeah, that's bad. And yeah, the song, the title of the song is bad by today's standards, but was it satire? What about the fact that a black singer sang the song with her? It was part of a musical. Was it satire? Was it not satire? Was it this? Was it that? I don't know, but if this is the new standard, if the Kate Smith standard is the new one, which is any little thing, even if you've been dead for 40 years, even if you didn't do anything, even if whatever it was you're accused of was 80 plus years ago, oh no, we could still go in there and unperson you. We can erase you. We can disassociate. We can say, tut, tut. And what is Kate Smith to do? She's dead. If only we could exhume her body and force a groveling apology from her and a promise to work on social justice causes and be more woke in the future. If only we could do that. Well, actually, you know what? That wouldn't matter. Because I can't remember a single time in which somebody accused of being racist, sexist, bigoted ever issued an apology and then was granted clemency by the online mob. Actually, well, truth be told, if you are of the right political persuasion, yes, you will get that clemency. I was recently watching, again, one of my favorite movies of all time, 40-Year-Old Virgin, and I said to myself, they can't make this movie anymore. It's got just too many things that would be considered, oh my God. You'd have to take out certain lines in Superbad, like when Jonah Hill calls his buddy Fogel Faggle. Can't do that. Well, you know, Zabe, that's really not necessary. It's still a funny movie without that. Yeah, true. But then that's how teenage kids talk to each other. That's how they used to talk to each other. We're not doing that anymore. We are more sensitive. Well, okay, I hope so, but if you want to keep it real, you got to keep it real. You know, former presidents were slave owners. Could it get worse than that? What about their history and statues and all the artifacts in museums? Baseball itself banned black players until Jackie Robinson came along and broke the color barrier. Shall we ban baseball? And don't say that's an absurd comparison, because it's not. Things were different. and institutions and people evolve. But people who otherwise have no track record of being racist or bad and have been celebrated and awarded medals by the President of the United States and who have been dead for 35 years, you can't go backwards in time and go, oh, tut-tut. I mean, you can. And the Flyers did. And the Yankees have followed suit. But it's insane. Ty Cobb was a screaming racist. Shall we remove him from the Hall of Fame? I did a quick Google search. Like, Ty Cobb's in the Hall of Fame, right? Yes, he is. Okay. Well, what are we going to do? It was easy for Ty Cobb to be a screaming racist back then because the country was screamingly racist. Blacks didn't have equal rights. I think the modern rule is nowadays, and this is sad, but here's the litmus test that entities take when it comes to these issues. If something is A, symbolic, B, doesn't cost much money to strike a pose on, and C, will win accolades from some people on social media and in major metropolitan newspapers. Doesn't have to be all people, but if it wins some accolades as, okay, very good, you're very woke. And most importantly, D, if it involves somebody who is incidental enough to be thrown away into the trash bin of society's guilty conscience about the way things used to be, and Kate Smith would qualify, despite the fact she won a Presidential Medal of Freedom, she's incidental enough, she can be thrown away, and she can be unpersoned, so away we go. Because major companies, major sports teams, leagues, and entities will do it because they are scared of their own shadow, and nobody wants to die on that hill. And they are terrified of, oh my God, what's the reaction going to be? And if you think this is the last time, or if you think this is the most ridiculous thing that'll ever happen, I got news for you. It ain't, and it won't. So buckle up. Time now for Andy Pollin. All right, between periods, Zabecast, as I'm going to call Andy Pollin right now after the Caps lead 2-1 at the end of one, Game 6 at the Carolina Hurricanes. Who would have thought? What a world. I'd be interviewing Andy Pollin on a podcast between periods of a
hello.
Hockey. Hey, and you are live on our intermission report here for Capitals Mid-Game Live. Do you ever think you'd be talking to me in the middle of a hockey game for something called a podcast?
No, couldn't have imagined that when I got into radio in 1978.
Could you imagine watching as much hockey as you have the last 2 years?
No, I really couldn't. And I heard Ryan Kerrigan on the air today, and he's from Indiana. Now, that's Midwest, but I guess it's not really hockey country because Indianapolis doesn't have a team. And, you know, he fired up the crowd the other night where he chugged the beer through his jersey in the tribute to TJ Oshie. And he said, no, he was not a hockey fan growing up, but he's just gravitated to, you know, the success that the Capitals have had, and he's become a part of it. So I'm kind of in the same boat. You know, I didn't get a hockey team here until I was 15 years old, and I never really became that invested in hockey. I like to go to the games now and then. I rarely watch them on TV, but now spring is kind of cool around here, isn't it?
So are you now more of a hockey fan with the Stanley Cup run last year and what is hopefully going to be a deep run this year?
No question about it.
Okay. And do you feel like you understand the game better?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the nuances and finishing checks and things like that, but, you know, I know what a hell of a hit is and great saves by Holtby. And,
right, when you watch a game, when you watch a game now, you kind of understand the shape of, ooh, shit, that was a bad play. You shouldn't let that guy get into this part of the ice and stuff like that.
Right, right. and you can and my untrained eye could see the opening period of the last game. And again, they played pretty well tonight. It's a bad bounce that got the goal by Holtby, but other than that, they come out and they played in a different way, and you can tell that, you know, just by watching, even though I don't know all the ins and outs of hockey. Yeah.
That said, I can watch now other teams' series in the playoffs and really get into it, which I used to not really be into. I mean, I'll watch tonight Predators Stars and be into it, even though they aren't my team. There's just something about, I'd say that playoff hockey is like the sushi of sports, Andy. It's it is a delicacy, and it's not for everybody, but those who like sushi are usually sushi fanatics, where they talk about, oh, we got to go to that new sushi place. Ooh, I got a real hankering for sushi, right?
Yeah.
And you're into it, whereas most people are like, ugh, raw fish. Ugh, no thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's also a period of time where, you know, we would start talking about the Capitals in the playoffs, and the real hockey fans would go, oh, now you want to watch. Well, they don't seem to mind now that we're jumping on the bandwagon and getting into it. They seem to be okay with it.
The righteous vocal Capitals jihadis are some of the worst, most annoying fuckers on on the sports landscape. Because I'm convinced a lot of them, Andy, they don't really follow any other sports but hockey. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think there are a large number of fans that hockey is their only sport.
Yeah, and they're also very anti-Redskins, even when the Redskins are playing okay. Like, they see the Redskins as, like, the older brother who gets all the attention, and they don't really like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, and they're dead wrong. Like, I still have to fend off people saying, well, you talk about the Redskins all day. I want to take a minute-by-minute accounting of my show and shove it in people's faces and say, you have no idea how little Redskins I've been talking about. In fact, I've been talking so little Redskins, Andy, I have had to say to myself, God, you know, you should probably talk some Redskins, don't you think? The draft is coming up.
Yeah.
That, like, literally, that's how little I have talked Redskins, because I believe this team is so far away from being good that there's not a lot that I'm getting juiced up for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's also, you know, if Daniel Jones comes here, he's just a guy.
Quarterback Daniel Jones, Duke University, was projected late first rounder. He may be moving up the charts, depending on who you believe. He is a prototypical, statuesque, can't run, white quarterback.
Yeah.
Yay. So if exciting.
Comes to Washington, he's just a guy. If he goes somewhere else, he might develop into Peyton Manning. You know, Gil Brand made that comparison the other day. That's just kind of the way things go around here.
I saw that, Andy. Oh, sorry, my phone's... Well, that's weird. I just jostled my phone connection. Why is that way? I saw that quote from Gil Brand, and I'm like, damn it, Gil, you just got in the Hall of Fame. Why do you got to say some dumb shit that makes you sound like the doddering old man that you may be?
Yeah, but he is the godfather of the draft.
He was the godfather of the draft.
He was so far in front of everybody else, it isn't even funny.
All right, so let's talk draft and not kill people with hockey, because not everyone likes sushi. Everybody likes pizza, and I'd say that the NFL, Andy, is the pizza of sports.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's...
What did the late talk show host Tom Snyder once say about pizza? Go ahead. It's a podcast.
Okay. It's like a blowjob. Even when it's bad, it's good.
Right. And much like a blowjob, would you ever turn pizza down if offered? Hey, you want some pizza? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, that's right. No matter what kind of pizza it is, you would...
Right. There's just different levels of good pizza, not so good pizza, bad pizza, but you'll still eat generally bad pizza.
Yeah, and you won't say, oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever ate. It was like, yeah, that's bad pizza, but it was still pizza.
Yeah, I'd say gas station pizza and movie theater pizza. The pizza that they served at the Cobb Theater in Leesburg is some of the worst, most cardboard-like shit I've ever had, to the point where I almost went to the manager to say, here, take a bite out of this. You taste it and tell me, is this actual food? Because it's awful. Okay, I digress. Let's talk NFL draft. Here we are, just a couple days before the draft, and we have several good, intriguing questions, including the question of, is Arizona really going all in on Kyler Murray? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they are, because I think they think that Josh Rosen could be good. I think they believe that Kyler Murray could be great. And while they could be wrong, the risk isn't as great as it used to be with the rookie salary cap. So, you know, if you miss on him, try again next year. You'll have a coach in his second year. I think the general manager is good for another 2 or 3 years. So I think it's a relatively low risk for them, unless they believe that you've got Josh Rosen as the next Brett Favre, that you throw out the first year and he's going to be great. But I don't think they're necessarily sold on that.
Yeah, that was one comparison someone made to me, saying, hey, don't forget Brett Favre. Team gave up on him after 1 year. But Favre, as I recall, Andy, nearly drank himself out of the league when he was a Falcon.
That was part of it. And Jerry Glanville was running that run and shoot offense, and I don't think he ever really liked them. I think that was a draft pick that he didn't want, and I think that was just a bad mix. And Ron Wolf, who's in the Hall of Fame, he understood that Brett Favre had that kind of talent.
Yeah. So is there, like, the other angle on Kyler Murray is Arizona having second thoughts? Like, they may still go with him, but they might be thinking, what are we really doing here? Because, you know, there's this feeling with Kyler Murray, because remember, he started out at Texas A&M, and there were some thoughts that he had a little bit of entitlement to him because he played baseball as well and then transferred. And then this whole thing about he really didn't decide he was going to play football until this season was over, and he had such a great year and won the Heisman Trophy. And there's his dad, which is also a little bit troubling because we saw it with RG3. Where do you stand, having watched all through the years, quarterback after quarterback come through, the good, the bad, the great, everything in between? What's your vibe on Kyler Murray?
Yeah, I read the Robert Klemko story in SI. Did you read that?
I saw it referenced. The headline was, "What does Kyler Murray want?" or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. But I didn't read it. But do tell.
Well, the dad was also a two-sports star. And he signed a baseball deal coming out of high school. And he was not a good baseball player. He also got a $35,000 bonus to sign to play baseball, which was good money in those days. And he decided to go to Texas A&M to play football. And I forget the team who took him, but they wanted the money back. And I don't think he ever gave the money back. Then he went to A&M and was a really good quarterback, but ahead of his time. African-American, more of a runner than a passer, and the league wasn't ready for him. And he eventually wound up playing, I guess, a little bit in Canada, but never made it to the NFL. And those kind of situations are sometimes dangerous, in that the father is living out his dreams through the son.
Yeah.
And he said something to the effect a year ago, okay, now we're going to show him what we got. Meaning, you know, he knew he was going to finally get his chance, because he had come to Oklahoma figuring Baker Mayfield was leaving after his junior year.
Right.
Well, Mayfield stayed one more year, which meant he had to sit the bench an extra year, which he wasn't anticipating when he made his transfer from Texas A&M.
Right.
And so this was going to be the plan for the dad, that he was going to have this bust out year, and then he was going to be able to call his shots. Also, they had done preparation with a management group on how to handle these interviews going into the draft.
They should fire that group.
They did. But
good, because
they didn't listen to anything they told them.
Oh.
They said just keep talking, don't say anything, but keep talking. And he didn't say any. He didn't. You know, as you know, he just crapped the bed, basically.
So he did not. He did not have the art and the skill of talking without saying anything, which is difficult. But Joe Jackson Gibbs was the best at it.
Right, right. But it's also something that most people can master. there's a few talking points that you work on. You know, this is national media that you're going to be doing. You know, they're going to ask you about baseball. And I would think a guy like Dan Patrick, if you went to him and you said, okay, you can do this interview, but baseball's off limits, he wouldn't take the interview, right?
You'd think. There's a concept, there's a concept called burning the lifeboats, in which, you know, some general once upon a time in history invaded an island. As soon as his forces landed, he turned around and burned all the boats to basically say, we're here to win this battle. We're not going to flee. And now I'm taking away your options. Some would say that if you're a football player who has options, and this is a point Whitlock made on Fox Sports the other day, if you have options, you're not as desperate, you're not as focused, you're not as committed, you're not all in.
Right,
valid?
Right.
Valid, or is that overstated?
Oh, no, that's valid. And they also said in doing his interviews with the teams at the Combine, he said that he was proving his love for football in that he was risking his baseball career by possibly getting injured playing football.
That's weird.
Which to me didn't seem to be enough all in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that does seem a bit weird. I'm thinking of other other baseball-football combo QBs in history. Drew Henson was one for the Cowboys, right? He also played for the Yankees at one point. He turned out to be not very good at either.
Right.
Anyone else you can think of? Baseball?
Well, Chris Wenke, you know, tried baseball first and then failed. Yeah, oh yeah. That's why he was 27 or 28 years old when he won the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Jay Schrader
was drafted by the Blue Jays.
Number three pick of the entire draft. And he said, I remember interviewing him a few years ago at the Mickey Steele Golf Tournament. He said that he recognized that he couldn't play baseball when they were playing Dwight Gooden's minor league Mets team.
Yeah.
And he couldn't hit the slider. And so that's when he went back to play football. He thought he was going to play for the Raiders because Al Davis loved the big arm.
Oh yeah.
But he wound up playing for the Redskins. So
didn't we end up trading him to the Raiders?
Yeah.
For eventually, Jim Lachey.
Al wanted him. I mean, he was third string with the Redskins, and they traded him for a tackle who marginally is a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Didn't have a long career, but for 5 or 6 years was the best left tackle in the game.
Yeah, Jim Lachey was absolutely incredible. Didn't play long enough, really, to make the Hall of Fame, but that's one of the all-time great fleecings right there. And then, I guess, more modern terms, you know, Russell Wilson was a baseball/football guy, but I don't recall him ever flirting with pro baseball when he came out of college out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, and then the ultimate ruse was pulled off by John Elway, who said he was going to play baseball for the Yankees rather than play for the Colts. And the fact of the matter is, John Elway was the fourth or fifth best baseball player on the Stanford baseball team. It was just a complete snow job, and Irsay panicked. And he traded him away for a bag of beans, and that led to the team leaving town.
Isn't it funny that baseball is treated like the hollaback girl of sports, the side piece chick used as leverage only? Michael Jordan, I'm sick of basketball. I might go play baseball. I'll go bang this other sport for a while. It's not really my favorite. It doesn't seem to be anyone's favorite sport.
Well, I did some minor league baseball games when I worked in San Antonio. I went to a lot of minor league baseball games.
What level?
Minor league players.
Single A, double?
Double A Dodgers. And, again, guys came through there like Fernando Valenzuela and Steve Sachs and Oral Hershiser. I mean, they had, you know, really great players who came through. But the life is hard. Coming up through the minor leagues, that's rough. You ride the buses. You play in dingy stadiums. It's not a good life until you get to the major leagues. And even when you get to the major leagues, that 162 games is a grind.
Yeah.
It's a real grind. You got to love it. And if you don't love it, you're not going to succeed in it.
Got to love it, and you got to accept the fact you're going to suck at times and feel stupid. Like, I can't play this sport. I can't hit the ball.
Yeah.
And that's tough on a lot of modern athletes. And you talk about the minors being hard. How about being hard for announcers? I mean, what did you make per game calling the Double A Dodgers in San Antonio?
I didn't do a whole season. I did some, you know, playoff games and things okay. like that. I was not a regular announcer, but I would imagine, you know, guys, I know Gary Cohn has been doing the Mets for 30 years. He did 4 or 5, maybe 6 years in the minor leagues, and you're making dirt money. You're making, you know, sometimes you have to double as the PR guy, write the game notes, promotions, whatever it is. You got to be committed, and it's the lottery, because what are there, 30 teams? So right. 60 jobs, only one of 60 jobs in the major leagues. That's a hard deal.
And they all want to be the next Jack Buck or the next Ernie Harwell or the next Vin Scully. They all want to get to the bigs and stay there for 35 years.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing about it. If you do make it, there's a chance you can stay for a while. But, you know, reality is that you're not going to make it. There's too many guys trying to get there.
What is that I hear in the background, Andy?
That's Mrs. P. Very angry that the Hurricanes just scored a goal.
I must be on delay on my DVR because I heard her scream about 30 seconds before my TV. I love Mrs. P's passion for the sport. 2-2 as we have started period number two. Just last add on that minor league baseball thing. Do you think you could, let's say you were given the job of calling Major League Baseball on the radio, but the money wasn't great. Let's say the money was, I don't want to put a number out there, but let's just say the money wasn't really good, but you got the job as a Major League Baseball play-by-play man. Could you do the job? Would you do the job?
I would take the job. I don't know how good I'd be at it.
Would you enjoy the job?
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, really? I don't know how I'd feel about it. You know, I definitely would enjoy the job for the first 3-4 months. By the time you get to August, I don't know. But
what if you're calling a shitty team that is going to lose 100 games?
It's something that you have to have a passion for doing. And I've never made the emotional investment in doing it. I've never really pursued it. That's one thing. I mean, I did a couple of years of SMU basketball, but that's, you know, 30 games a year.
I couldn't imagine doing it, Andy. I really couldn't. It's fucking baseball every day.
And if
you're calling a team who's bad, you've got to sell it like, great day at the ballpark here at Kauffman Stadium. Royals currently trying to climb within 10 games under 500 and got a little momentum off that 4-1 loss last night.
All right, but a significant portion of your listenership for this podcast is Milwaukee, right?
Yes.
Does Bob Uecker have to do it? No. He does it because he loves it. And he's great at it. And he's had some bad Brewer teams over the years. But I've seen him. I've been at Nats games when they played the Brewers, and I turn around and go, whoa, that's Bob Uecker. And he's standing in that chow line just like everybody else.
But
riding the buses.
Uke is baseball, and Uke is of baseball, and he's Mr. Baseball.
Yeah, okay. But
I'm saying that's not me. I'm not sure I could do it every single day.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had the opportunity, and I've never really pursued that opportunity, so it's hard for me to say.
But you take the job anyway, you selfish fucking pig. You're like, give me a job. I'll take any job. Just give me a job. What's that, baseball?
I'd do the best I could. I wouldn't just, you know, jake it. I would go in and give it a shot.
You know what, Andy?
Give it my best shot.
Andy, you've got the right approach. In this business, if there's a job that's decent, that's offered to you, fucking take it.
Take it. Do the best you can.
Take it.
What's the worst thing they can do?
Right. Fire you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you hate it,
fired.
Quit.
Yeah, you know, it's not like I go, whoa, that's never happened to me before.
Right.
It happens.
Canes just scored. It's now 2-2, and the Caps have committed a penalty. Carolina's on the power play. Let's take a break, Andy. We'll reconvene between the second and third periods to wrap up today's podcast. So stay tuned for more right after this.
Welcome back.
A second period of rock'em sock'em hockey, Andy. That was some exciting stuff. Goal disallowed on a high stick by Justin Williams, former Capital. Mm-hmm. And we are going into the third period tied 2-2. Enjoying the game tonight?
Yeah, a little nervous. I think there's a life that I didn't expect from Carolina after the Caps went up 2-1. But we'll see. Third period should be good.
All right. We are a week old on this, but I do want your thoughts. How did you enjoy Tiger's amazing win at the Masters?
It was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. Now, some things had to happen where players fell in front of him. That was a little bit
choked. Threw the tournament away.
Yeah. So, you know, that is, and it hadn't happened before. I mean, it's incredible that Tiger had never won coming from behind in the final day of a major. And to see him do that was great. And it's just a different guy. I mean, he's, I wouldn't say completely humble, but he's humbled. And, you know, seeing him hug his kids, I got caught up in the whole thing. I
mean, did you really?
Call me a sucker.
Did you get moist-eyed?
Not moist-eyed, okay. But it was really, really good. And what has amazed me is people who know far more about golf than I do are talking about him being back in play to break Jack's record. I don't know. That's four more majors, right?
Three to tie, four to win. And yeah, it's such an amazing comeback, because I'm sure you're a big advocate of the Washington Post. You still get a hard copy delivered to your driveway?
Yes, I do, every day.
And so you read the Adam Kilgore piece in which he interviewed doctors, back doctors, who universally said, this is a miracle. Like, this, there's no precedent for somebody coming back to this high level of function. The procedure was supposed to relieve pain and discomfort, not intended to restore high athletic function, yet here Tiger is.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. And I think back to when he was promoting his tournament at Congressional, and he hit four shots, and three of them didn't clear the water.
There were wedges. He was hitting a 90-yard wedge shot on the number 10 hole at Congressional, which is normally 205, but he played it from up there because they knew he was coming off of his third back surgery, and they basically said, well, let's put him up close where he won't embarrass himself. He did anyway. That's how far he's come. Now, you said you got wrapped up in the moment. One of my somewhat cynical golf buddies, Scott Shirey, said, yeah, shout out to all the single dads whose wives got a bit hysterical in the divorce.
Okay.
That's how he dubbed the moment for Tiger and his kids.
You could look at it that way, but you have to look at it from my perspective, someone who didn't care that much about golf and got into watching Tiger.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's the thing, Andy. You are the guy that always loved watching Tiger. You didn't really watch much other golf, right?
No.
But you would watch the U.S. Open, right? You'd watch
majors.
A little bit of that. And maybe a little bit of the British, because it's on in the morning, which is convenient.
Yeah.
And
you
goddamn didn't watch any of the PGA Championship. I guarantee you that. Unless Tiger was in it and in the hunt.
Or somebody well-known was in it. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I do like the Sunday afternoon. And this was another thing that was perfect for me, that this was a Sunday morning event, which was even better.
Yes, exactly right. And you are a casual golf fan, and you enjoy the game, and you appreciate its difficulty, even though when you tried to take it up, what was that, 15 years ago now?
It was more like 10.
Okay, you tried to take it up recreationally. You gave it a good shot. Carol Maloney, a television personality, wonderful woman in town, gifted you a packet of lessons, right?
Yep. And you was a great teacher.
And you dutifully went through the lessons, and you gave it a shot, and you said at the end of it, nah, not for me.
Well, I think, as I've told you before, you have to practice. So I bought a bucket of balls, which was $10, and I practiced the things that I was taught by John Lesage, who is a great guy and a great teacher, and actually gave me free lessons, more than what Carol had paid for. And I realized I remembered little of what he told me. I was incredibly frustrated at the shots I was hitting. And I said to myself, you know, if I'd have taken that $10 and gone to the movies, I'd be happy now. So I turned everything in and I quit.
I even though I still laugh at how you quit the game so quickly without really giving it a long shot at it, and you obsessing about the money of $10 buckets, I respect, Andy, how forcefully and how without regret you quit the game.
Yeah,
part of me as a golfer, and every serious golfer who's ever been really into the game, has been so pissed off, so frustrated, so heartbroken by the game that he or she has wanted to quit, but they can't quit, like they're in the mafia. Yeah. I look at how you quit, and part of me swoons thinking, God, if I could only do what Andy did, I too would save a lot of money and time and grief. So at least I respect that. But you at least are golf positive. Your partner on the weekends, Lovey, Tom Lovero, is so anti-golf. It's out of control. It's ridiculous.
This theory that he has is that golf writers are soft on players because they play. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, that's his theory?
Yeah. He says, because they play the game. And they think, you know, like they're relating to the golfers as fellow golfers. And I said, that's insane. That's just ridiculous.
I get it. So in other words, it's part of it is a journalistic thing with Lovey that he doesn't respect golf writers. But some of the great writers in sports writing history have been great at writing golf. Notably, Dan Jenkins, who recently passed away.
Oh, he was one of the best. Isn't he considered like the best golf writer ever?
Probably, yeah. Unless you're going back to Herbert Warren Wind, who coined the phrase Amen Corner at Augusta National.
Yeah. But from what I gather, Jenkins was a very good golfer. He was a college golfer, and I guess marginally could have been a pro. I don't know. But
I don't know about,
he had relation.
I don't know about that, but he definitely played the game. Dave Kindred, who wrote All Sports, still alive, and a great guy and a great writer. You would think that Lovero would at least respect guys like that.
Yeah, he does. But, you know, I guess because Dave also does what Tom respects most, boxing, he gives him a pass for the golf.
Yeah. I'll never forget, I took on Tom Lovero in the Hillbilly Putter Challenge at our annual charity golf tournament at the radio station. There was 2 years we did it. Now, for those that don't know, Lovero at a rest stop driving to the Catskills. Was it the Catskills or no? It was upstate New York for Bumstock. Lovero's annual get together with his 60s era no accounts, drinking beer, sitting around, telling stories, doing nothing. They call this Bumstock, right? So on his drive up there, he stops at one of those rest stops with a kitschy gift shop, a Stuckey's. Yeah. And in it, there's something called the Hillbilly Putter, which is nothing more than a twig, literally just a branch picked off the ground, shaved down with another larger branch screwed into the end of it, and the face flattened, and it says Hillbilly Putter. Like, this is how cheap a putter would be if you were a hillbilly, and that's all you could afford. I told Lovero, I said, I could beat you in one hole of golf with this thing. And you could use a full set of clubs. And Lovero was adamant. He's like, no way. I'll still beat you. Hate this game. I'll still beat you. And I think I swung so hard with that stupid stick putter, I broke it.
No, but you won. It was very Trevinish. Lee Trevinish.
Lee Trevinish. Me just, of course, I think I won with a 13 or something like that. So it's not like
but we got the ball. I was helping him out, and
you were caddying for him.
Yeah, the ball got stuck in like a rabbit hole, so there were like four shots trying to whack it out there.
Yeah. That said, Andy, the Masters is great sports theater. Agreed.
Oh, and you know, say what you want about Jim Nance, he was, I thought, perfect, and
he shut up for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
After the last putt went in.
And I'd heard him tell the story before about how after Jack won, which was, I guess, his first year 86. Doing or anchoring the coverage.
Yeah, he was on and, 16, I believe.
Yeah, and Ken Venturi came up to him afterwards and he said, young man, you may see another 50 Masters, but you'll never see one like this again. And he said to Tiger, Ken was wrong. And I think so. I mean, I think this was.
I agree.
This, as great as
this
Jack's
was, better.
This was better.
This was
yeah,
better
really
because
was.
Because the chants at the end of Tiger, were like Maximus. It's unheard of. I've watched golf my whole life. I've never seen a tournament where the fans chanted the winner's name like
yeah,
a stadium.
Yeah.
Like a stadium.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And it's crazy how well Tiger is loved now. Yes, he's a better outward persona guy. We don't know the real person, but his outward vibe is way better now on version 3.0. But he's so loved by golf fans now, it's crazy.
No, he's and I think all the golfers owe him because the money that he's channeled into the sport
But as one of the French kings said, après moi le déluge. After Tiger, what's the sport going to do, Andy?
Yeah, that's true, because even though he hasn't been playing for the last, or hasn't been winning, I should say, for the last 10 years, it's been about, well, is he going to win again? You know, what's going to happen with Tiger? And he's 43, so in 6 or 7 years, he won't be winning again. And what will, and we've always been waiting for the next breakthrough guy, whether it was Rory, whether it was Spieth. Nobody's really taken the torch.
There's nobody like Tiger. There's nobody as dominant. Yeah. There's nobody who pops through your television, both in his physique, how he walks, his aura, his concentration, just the vibe. Nobody approaches it. It's unbelievable. By the way, it's King Louis the 15th. Après-moi le déluge. Actually, it was first attributed to Madame de Pompadour, the lover of King Louis the 15th, but I digress.
How about that?
Okay. Speaking of kings, have you been watching Game of Thrones, Andrew?
No, I never watched that.
Will you?
I don't think so.
What TV shows have you watched? Because it dawned on me as I was going to ask you this question, knowing full well you're not watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
What TV shows have you watched?
Sopranos.
Okay. So that was the last show you were really into.
Yeah, and when those drums would start beating at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, I'd get really excited.
Yeah. So why then didn't you get into other modern day blockbuster shows like Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones or The Wire? What is it? I know you watch sports and you go to movies.
I do. And I watch 60 Minutes, and I like the cooking shows. I watch those.
Okay. Do you watch house shows?
I watch that home improvement shows. Yeah, I do.
Do you watch DIY? Do you watch the real estate shows where they're couples are shopping for homes in various places?
Yeah, I did a little bit. I don't watch those as much anymore. But the one I really like, the home improvement show, this guy Mike Holmes.
Yes, exactly.
Have you seen this?
Canadian, yeah, he's the guy. He would go in and find shit that was done all wrong, and then he'd like well up almost in tears, pissed off at the shitty contractors, and he'd be like, I'm going to make this right for the homeowners.
Yeah, well, basically, he tears the house down, and the cost, you know, at the end, the cost is like, you know, more than the house. And so it's not something that you could really relate to because you wouldn't have a contractor do that. But what he's showing you is, okay, before you hire somebody, make sure you have them checked out, make sure you get some references, make sure he's got licenses. That's the point of that.
Have you ever read the backstory on HGTV, the channel and
no.
the network?
How it got started? No.
Yeah, and where they're based out of. I think they're based out of Tennessee. I want to say Nashville.
Yeah.
And basically, they have a very tight cost structure on their shows and on their stars because they've been so successful. They figured out Americans will sit and watch other people mull real estate and look at houses and look at and do renovations, and they'll enjoy that as entertainment. It'll get ratings. It doesn't cost hardly anything in the big scheme of things, even if they're paying for renovations or whatever. Simple television production. God damn it. God, and you know what? You're ahead of me, so you said God damn. 3-2 Carolina Hurricanes right now. 16 minutes left, third period. I tried to get to Andy cleanly in between periods, but I was a little bit late getting the phone. So we're going to bleed over for four more minutes, Andy. Then we'll be done. I'll release you to the hockey game as me. So anyway, they, you know, the deal was they figured out, A, people will watch this. B, it'll be cheap to produce the shows. C, there's a myriad of spinoff shows that can be had. Renovation shows, moving shows, international shows, yada, yada, yada. House flipping, etc. And then on top of it, how easy is it to sell advertising for these shows? Because it's all for home shit that everyone needs. Right?
Power tools. Right?
Yeah. Sure. Power tools, sprinklers, shop vacs, you name it. It's brilliant. I wish I had thought of it myself.
I watched This Old House 30 years ago, the Bob Vila show. So, you know, it's not totally new, but a whole channel of it is.
That's the
thing.
The
various people that do it, you know, it's interesting, the cross section. And, you know, usually there's a very attractive woman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's kind of a thing to watch her use a Sawzall, you know.
Absolutely. An attractive woman that knows how to use tools. A dream girl in many men's eyes. Although some men would look at it, I think some men that are very handy or perhaps work as tradesmen themselves, they would look at it and they'd go, she's doing it all wrong. Fucking ridiculous.
Maybe.
Honey, put the bandsaw down and cook me a dinner.
Yeah.
Sexist pigs. So, all right, back to the show thing. Why don't you get into any shows? Now, I don't get into very many. I wait for a show to really gain a major force on the pop culture landscape. That's why it was 5 years into Game of Thrones before I picked up the scent and started binge watching. I didn't start watching Breaking Bad, Andy, until it was over.
Okay, yeah. So I have to do that, and I know people who watch it and they like it. Now I did get in our. I forgot. I got in early on The American, so I watched that whole show.
Oh, you
did? I watched all
six
seasons. Yeah, I did. I watched all six seasons, and that was good. I really liked that show. But yeah, I feel like if a show has already started, even though you can get in late, and I did get in late on The Sopranos because I don't even think I had HBO the first few years of the show.
Yeah,
but. It feels weird to get in them because you're not really familiar with the characters. So I don't know. I mean, you could actually get in 5 years in and know what was going on. That was interesting.
No, because I caught up, Andy, by binge watching.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Do you know all these shows are online available?
I know on demand and people even give you DVDs,
But I'm very picky though, because there's so many shows now. And people are always saying, ooh, you got to watch this. Ooh, you got to watch that. I really wait and wait and wait until something has an undeniable force. And then I'll give it a try. But I don't always take to it. Game of Thrones, I did. I didn't think I would. Breaking Bad, I was annoyed because I wasn't watching it. And that's all anyone was talking about. And then when I did start watching it, I was like, holy shit, this is good.
So maybe
mix a little bit of that into your diet right there. One last show note, and then we're done here. Have you been seeing the guy making a run on Jeopardy for Ken Jennings' record?
I haven't seen the show, but I read about it, and it seems to be a perfect storm of really good knowledge and the ability to bet big.
Yeah, this guy, his name is James Holzhauer, and his strategy is to seek out daily doubles and to crush the daily doubles, to bet as heavy as he can on the daily double. And then it gives him a huge cushion, provided that he hits them.
Yeah. I mean, the show to me has never really been about money, because there are other game shows where there's a lot more money. But to see somebody get on a run is you know, really good. Now, you could have a conspiracy here, in that Alex Trebek has announced he's got pancreatic cancer, and maybe the producers are worried about the future of the show.
No, you didn't. By the way, is Trebek hosting these current shows going on?
I think so, yeah.
While getting treatment?
Well, he made an announcement that, you know, he's going to try to beat it. He said the prognosis isn't good, but,
right,
you know, he's got 2 years left on his contract, and he's gonna make a go of it.
It's amazing he looks as good as he does, considering I thought he'd be undergoing immediate heavy radiation treatment and everything else.
Yeah, I don't know what's involved, but Charles Van Dorn just passed away. You know, I like the obits. And if you saw the movie Quiz Show, you did see that, didn't you?
Yeah, I was about to set up the whammy with, well, Andy, that's quite a theory, but as we all know, no game show in American history has ever been rigged. So yeah. Oh, wait, what's that? Oh, yeah, Quiz Show. What was the name? Was that the name of the show, Quiz Show?
No, it was the $64,000 question.
Oh, okay. And that, yeah. I did see the movie. I've kind of forgotten most of it, but the basic thing was, yes, they rigged the show for maximum entertainment value, right?
Well, that was part of it. There was also a guy named Herb Stempel, who everybody found annoying. And so they wanted somebody to beat Herb Stempel. And that's when they came up with Charles Van Dorn. And John Turturro as Stempel was great in this movie. Just great.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. It was rigged. Yeah, it was. Now, there were others who actually won on that show legitimately. And the thing that you did was you took a category that was you were not an expert in. For example, Dr. Joyce Brothers, a very famous psychiatrist, psychologist, whatever she was on TV, radio, she took boxing and she crushed it. You know, so that's the way that show worked.
Yeah. All right, Andy. Well, look, there's a TV show Thursday called The NFL Draft. And if you had told me or anyone years ago that this thing would be one of the most popular TV shows of the spring, I'd say you're fucking crazy. But here we are.
Well, I go back to the days when it was on a Tuesday. It would start in the morning.
Tuesday?
And yeah, Tuesday.
Tuesday morning?
Tuesday morning, it was 12 rounds. They may have even gotten it all done in a day.
It was on ESPN?
Even before, it was like 1980 was the first year it was on ESPN, and they only did a couple hours, too. It wasn't like they were there all day.
When do you first remember watching the NFL draft?
Probably, well, because I didn't have ESPN until probably like 83.
Okay.
So... I remember I would, you know, when I was working in Dallas, so that was in 81 and 82, those two draft years, I guess in 83 also, that we would go to the Cowboy headquarters and they would have, you know, TV coverage of it. And then Gil Brandt would come out, you know, after they make their picks and, you know, talk to the media. And that was kind of it. And the original idea for it came from Chet Simmons, who was the head of ESPN at the time. And he went to Pete Rozelle and he said, we'd like to televise the draft. And Rozelle said, who would watch it?
Now it's on three.
And here we are.
Now it's on three networks, ESPN, NFL Network, and now ABC this year for the first
prime time. Prime time.
Fucking believable. Andy, we got a situation. Carolina power play. They're up 3-2. This is bad right now. We got a bear down. Thanks for your time. Go Caps. We'll talk to you next week, bro.
All right, Jake.
All right, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Let's end on this today. What I know about the Ukraine is that it's a proud country that does not want to be referred to as a road apple. At least that's what Seinfeld taught me when Kramer was playing... He's playing, what's the war game? Killing me right now. He's playing the board game with all the world continents and the armies. And he's like, Ukraine. Ukraine's a road apple. I'm going to go right through them. Onwards to the Baltic Sea. Guys on the subway train saying, what's that about Ukraine? Ukraine strong, not weak. Well, Ukraine... has apparently elected a comedian whose only political experience consists of playing a president on TV. They've elected him as their actual president. Unbelievable. Volodymyr Zelensky received 73% of the vote as President Petro Poroshenko got a mere 25%, a crushing rebuke to Poroshenko's 5 years in office. The election was considered to be a reaction against the country's entrenched corruption and low standard of living. Even before the results started trickling in, Poroshenko, the current president, accepted defeat based on exit polls, saying, "I am leaving office, but I want to firmly underline that I am not leaving politics." Dude, you just lost to a comedian. This might be it for your political career. I don't know the intricacies of Ukrainian politics, but I would kind of think this would be a death knell for you. Zelensky, the comedian, for his part, has promised wide changes at the top echelons of government and said his number one task would be securing the release of about 170 Ukrainian military members taken prisoner in the East or in Russia. Well, good for him. What does Ukrainian comedy entail? What does it sound like? What are the jokes? I need to Google this guy. I need to YouTube this guy. He might be slapdash funny. On a serious note, this is part of what I believe is coming, not just to America, but worldwide with the election of Trump. I believe that I will not see another non-celebrity president in my lifetime. That's right. Every president going forward, I believe, will be a celebrity of some sort. They will not be your standard stock-and-trade politician. Not senators, not governors, not congressmen. They are going to come from a different quarter of society. Now, the problem is they're still going to have all the career politicians around them. They're going to have the career lobbyists guiding them. That these non-politicians, which make the country feel good because they're like, yay, let's vote for this guy or this gal, they're going to be dropped into the morass and the swamp that is the inside the beltway political machine of Washington, D.C. And we're going to get the government good and hard that we deserve. Not that we want. It'll be the government that we richly deserve for better or for worse. And let's hope and pray it's for the better. All right, that will do it for me today. Thank you again for listening and downloading. Don't forget, get the Zabecast app. It's free. It is so good. It's so convenient. It's your one finger press to all things Zabecast on your phone at your convenience. Go download it today. Search for Zabecast on either your Google Play or iTunes Store. If you want to subscribe to Fridays, I appreciate it very much. Go to zabe.com/premium. And remember, podcasts are yours to enjoy at your own leisure. And I thank you for being part of this one. Email me with topics, suggestions, and feedback at zabe@yahoo.com. Now, thanks for listening. I've got some Ukrainian YouTube to go search for, and I will see you next time. Like rain on the sun today, like $1 million that you're giving away, like a stray dog on the freeway, we'll fly.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.